About 40 women from the Women's Strike Collective visited the offices of the Katherine Gibbs Secretarial School at 200 Park Avenue this afternoon to protest the school's alleged role in relegating women to secretarial and other subservient positions in the business world. When they reached the school's third floor offices, they were met by the school's president, Alan Baker, who spent a half hour discussing the women's accusations with the entire group. The women charged that the Katherine Gibbs School discriminates against women in its advertising and trains women to accept positions of low salary and prestige even when they are qualified for higher level jobs. The tone of the conversation was open and even-tempered, and Mr. Baker admitted at several points that the school might be guilty of some of the women's allegations, and he said that he would initiate a re-examination of the school's programs. Here is a portion of that conversation.
How come men don't need an entree training
exactly.
program?
Exactly.
Well,
I think you should all recognize that what you're putting me in the position of is defending a system that I don't necessarily.
You're fortifying it with your ads.
Women learn to be an executive assistant. That's fortifying the existing way.
On the other hand, we.
What are your future plans for recruiting men into the Katherine Gibbs School? Train them to have exciting positions.
We have plans which I would prefer not to announce at this time.
But let
me finish. Because we're still in the business of developing a curriculum. We're still in the process of developing a curriculum. But we will announce within the next 6 months programs which will appeal both to men and to women,
Why
we feel.
Why can't the same program that the women attend appeal to men?
Well, I think we're all a victim of the system at this point, don't you? I was a secretary.
You are?
Yes. We called it administrative assistant, but I was. I was a secretary. Isn't that up to the girl who's on the job?
Clothes? This is what I'm trying to investigate, really. I think this is really important, is the general atmosphere of subservience and the office wife syndrome. And my understanding is that Katherine Gibbs does reinforce this. Please your man at any cost, because remember, your job is pleasing men.
I think that that is true in our course today. It's time to take a good look at it, and I promise you that we will, because that's an area that needs exploration.
Very good.
How about the
Ann DeLeo of Now was the group's main spokeswoman, and when the large meeting broke up, she made an appointment to discuss the issues in more detail with Mr. Baker next week. This is Bruce Soloway reporting.
That report came to us from Katherine Gibbs Secretarial School this afternoon, one of the winners of one of the Barefoot and Pregnant Awards. Continuing with our chronological recapitulation of today's strike activities, Bruce Soloway was at the march, and here's his report.
The Women's March for Equality started about a half hour late this evening, but is now moving at a steady pace down Fifth Avenue, and has already reached about 53rd Street. The march consists of many thousands of people. It's impossible to estimate the size of the crowd at this point. It extends all the way across Fifth Avenue. There's no traffic on the avenue right now, and it's several blocks long. Last time I looked, it was at least five or six blocks long. The march is moving slowly. There's a line of marshals in front of the crowd, keeping it contained and moving it at a slow pace, stopping every now and then to let crosstown traffic move across Fifth Avenue. The march was delayed in starting. It started about 6 o'clock rather than 5:30. The reason for the delay was apparently an inability of the march organizers to get the crowd contained in one area before starting on the march. This is Bruce Soloway from Fifth Avenue.
Bella Abzug, the Democratic candidate in the 19th Congressional District, was one of the main speakers at the rally, which took place at Bryant Park, where the march culminated. Here's Bella Abzug speaking at this evening's rally.
We should rejoice today because today we are making it clear that we declare that there is a women's liberation in this movement in the city of New York and throughout the nation of these United States.
Bella Abzug is candidate for Congress in the 17th District.
We declare that today, 50 years after suffrage, the women once again are saying that we shall share in the full economic, political, and social life of our country. Today, the women are saying that we shall have a national comprehensive 24-hour child care system for the 40 and 50% of America's working women, and yay for all of the women in this country. Today, we say that we shall have a free abortion on demand under medical supervision as a matter of a national health right available to all of us. Today, we say that no one, no institution of industry, no institution of government, no institution of society can deny women's clear demand for equal pay, for equal employment opportunity, and for equal educational opportunity. But more than that, the women say today that our liberation movement represents an expression of the full political power of women's 53% vote in this country. And we shall use this power, we say, to America and to the power structure. All of us, regardless of our view of the system and its lack of responsiveness to our needs, the needs of women, referred to here as the oppressed majority, the needs of the black, the needs of the Puerto Rican, the needs of the poor, and the needs of all of us for a decent share of America. We demand today our full share of the decision-making process, and we demand today our full share of the vast resources and energies of this country. But we shall not attain the true meaning of our liberation. We shall not attain the true meaning of our equality unless we also struggle against that in society which oppresses all of us. That war in Indochina, the militarization in our society, which seeks to render all of society impotent to cope with the dislocations of our time. What we are saying here today as we struggle for women's liberation, that we, the women of this country, shall lead in a mighty liberation, a liberation of womankind and mankind from military expansion. From repression against those who seek social change, and from the malignant neglect that is visited upon all of us by the policies of government which oppresses us. What we are saying today is that we, the women, will take off where we started 50 years ago, when in our struggle against the abolition for slavery, we found that we were not free unless we freed ourselves. Where we declare our freedom today, we declare our freedom so that we can help make this country free and indeed make the world free from military intervention, from oppression of women, oppression of black minorities and other groups, from participating in a full life, from participating in a truly great world, a non-nuclear world in which all the peoples in it are free to develop themselves in their own style and image, in which all of the people are sovereign. In which all of the people are sovereign in their liberation And so, sisters and brothers, as we go out today, let us build this mighty movement bigger and bigger. Let us give notice and serve notice on all institutions of our society, on all governments in our society, in all industry of our society, in all institutions, and say that the women's liberation movement shall lead in this country and in the world to provide a peaceful society and a future for the generations that come, a future for free people, a future in which we all partake in the decision-making process and partake in a just distribution of all the resources of the people for the benefit of the many instead of the benefit of the few.
I stand corrected. Bella Abzug is candidate from the 19th Congressional District, Democrat, but more important than that, she's long been identified with peace and women's liberation speeches and causes.
That we must struggle for liberation every day, and that we shall succeed for the power and the rights of all of the people. Thank you.
That was Bella Abzug as she spoke this evening at the rally for the August 26th women's strike. The next speaker is Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's the chairman of the New York City Commission on Human Rights. She also was one of the main speakers at this evening's rally.
It is not surprising that America, so long deaf and blind to the inhumanity of racial oppression, would come late to understand sexual oppression. It is not surprising in America, where migrants still live like animals, where Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans still are not full citizens, where Italians and Jews and other ethnic groups still are stereotyped, where the poor remain shunted into ghastly ghettos and rural enclaves. With all this unfinished business for equality, it is not surprising that women have emerged late as the largest single group to which America still owes equal protection. There are two obvious ways in which America would be thrown into bankruptcy tomorrow. If the Supreme Court were to rule that the country had to pay back wages for the free labor it got from black slaves and the exploited labor it has gotten from their black descendants, or if the courts were to require that back wages be paid for the free labor of women, or to rectify the inequality in pay they receive for working. But blacks and women are making a far simpler demand, one within the easy grasp of a rich country, one that carries no dangers of bankruptcy. Beginning today, women demand that we erase all the empty and artificial barriers. Sex, like color, is most often a meaningless criterion, which becomes an oppressive criterion when it is considered among the qualifications for a job. No form of discrimination against women is more extensive, more serious, or more costly than job discrimination. Yet many Americans have fooled themselves into believing that women work for the fun instead of for the necessity of it. The cost of living in a constantly inflationary economy such as ours makes working a necessity for almost all women who work. Women, like men, want to work for reasons of self-fulfillment, but like most men, most women work because they have no choice. America, you cannot turn your face from these facts. Listen. The average working woman is 39 years old, married and living with a husband who needs her salary to supplement his. Almost half of all mothers work, a quarter of them with children under 3 years old. 50% of white mothers with children 6 to 17 work, and 62% of black mothers with children these ages work. Do these sound like women with time on their hands?
WBAI, New York.
These figures tell the true story that women work because they must, but are forced to make far more sacrifices than men to enter the job market that demands their labor. Women must work, but for only 58% of the average male salary. Women must work, but clerical work remains their mainstay with few other fields open to them. Women must work, but only 31 states have laws guaranteeing them equal pay for equal work. Women must work, but only 15 states forbid job discrimination based on sex. America has learned to decry statistics such as these when they apply to the oppressed minorities. When will they learn that such statistics are just as shameful when they relate to America's oppressed majority? Statistics like these are a major reason women demand immediate passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. Like blacks, women are unwilling to leave their rights to the whim of the legislatures which have denied those rights for so long. What the legislature gives, it can take back. What it enacts, it can repeal. Nothing short of a constitutional amendment can wipe away job inequality. With all the protective legislation on the books, women are still the largest group of exploited workers in the country. The latest Department of Labor statistics show that women are the fastest growing group of unemployed workers in this current period of recession. When women lose their jobs, their families, their children suffer. For the so-called extra money most women earn often means the difference between poverty and modest comfort. Although this is obviously the case for black women who work, what the country has refused to face is that it is also the case for white women who work. Thus, women, white and black, have common cause to see that America does not replace job discrimination based on race with job discrimination based on sex as the country's most serious domestic problem. Let me close with a word on black women, because their role in the struggle for sexual equality is much confused. Indeed, I wear the dress of my African forebears tonight, not to be senselessly symbolic, but to dramatize the fact that black women have a stake in the fight for equality for women. Because they are the most exploited women. Unlike the white woman, the black woman has always worked, from slavery to today, because the black family in America could not have survived without her meager wages to supplement the paltry pay of her husband, or in some cases to substitute for him as breadwinner. Yes, America welcomed black women into the job market as charwomen, mammies, maids, and domestics. The plight of the black woman worker vividly illustrates that the fight is not simply for jobs, but but against exploitive working conditions for women workers. Household workers, waitresses, scrub women, and migrant workers should be at the front of the line today to tell America that it must not only open more jobs to women, but it must make exploitative women's jobs into dignified and well-paid work.
That was Eleanor Holmes Norton, chairman of the New York City Commission on Human Rights, speaking at this evening's rally in Bryant Park. You're listening to WBAI in New York, and we're recapitulating the day's events. We began in sort of chronological order, and we're currently in the midst of the rally. The next speaker is Kate Millett, author of the current bestseller, Sexual Politics and Ardent Women's Liberationist.
You know, today is a really beautiful day, right? And like, you're beautiful, I love you. We have a movement now. We're never gonna stop. This is the 50th anniversary of the first movement and its death. And it's the beginning of the new movement. Today is the first day of our lives. From now on, we're a revolution. Today is the end of millenniums of our oppression. We will never be slaves again. We have been slaves for thousands of years. We have been raped, pillaged, burned, murdered, cut into pieces. We have been prostituted. We have been sequestered in homes, treated like animals. We have been harassed daily on the streets. We are subject still. Yeah, you know that.
WBAI New York.
We are subject still to the living slavery of prostitution. And tonight, all over Broadway and 57th Street, oppressed women will have to sell themselves to eat. But this is going to stop. Nowhere do we suffer as much as in this one concrete form of slavery left. In prostitution. Pimps are slave drivers. Prostitutes are exploited by everybody, by the vice squad, who are pimps. The dictionary says a pimp lives on the earnings of a prostitute. Well, what we're out to end is a whole system, and it's called sexism. Yeah. You know, and it's everywhere. It's in people's heads. It's in their attitudes, their values, their psychological set. It's taught to them from the time of their infancy. It's like racism. And baby, it's hard to get rid of, but we're gonna do it.
The Women's March for Equality started about a half hour late this evening, but is now moving at a steady pace down Fifth Avenue and has already reached about 53rd Street. The march consists of many thousands of people. It's impossible to estimate the size of the crowd at this point. It extends all the way across Fifth Avenue. There's no traffic on the avenue right now, and it's several blocks long. Last time I looked, it was at least five or six blocks long. The march is moving slowly. There's a line of marshals in front of the crowd, keeping it contained and moving it at a slow pace, stopping every now and then to let crosstown traffic move across Fifth Avenue. The march was delayed in starting. It started about 6 o'clock rather than 5:30. The reason for the delay was apparently an inability of the march organizers to get the crowd contained in one area before starting on the march. This is Bruce Holloway from Fifth Avenue.
We should rejoice today because today we are making it clear that we declare that there is a women's liberation in this movement in the city of New York and throughout the nation of these United States.
Bella Abzug is candidate for Congress in the 17th District.
We declare that today, 50 years after suffrage, the women once again are saying that we shall share in the full economic, political, and social life of our country. Today, the women are saying that we shall have a national comprehensive 24-hour child care system for the 40% and 50% of America's working women, and yay for all of the women in this country. Today we say that we shall have a free abortion on demand under medical supervision as a matter of a national health right available to all of us. Today we say that no one, no institution of industry, no institution of government, no institution of society can deny women's clear demand for equal pay, for equal employment opportunity, and for equal educational opportunity. But more than that, the women say today that our liberation movement represents an expression of the full political power of women's 53% vote in this country. And we shall use this power, we say, to America and to the power structure. All of us, regardless of our view of the system and its lack of responsiveness to our needs, the needs of women, referred to here as the oppressed majority, the needs of the black, the needs of the Puerto Rican, the needs of the poor, and the needs of all of us for a decent share of America. We demand today our full share of the decision-making process, and we demand today our full share of the vast resources and energies of this country. But we shall not attain the true meaning of our liberation. We shall not attain the true meaning of our equality unless we also struggle against that in society which oppresses all of us. That war in Indochina, the militarization in our society, which seeks to render all of society impotent to cope with the dislocations of our time. What we are saying here today as we struggle for women's liberation, that we, the women of this country, shall lead in a mighty liberation, a liberation of womankind and mankind from military expansion. From repression against those who seek social change, and from the malignant neglect that is visited upon all of us by the policies of government which oppresses us. What we are saying today is that we, the women, will take off where we started 50 years ago, when in our struggle against the abolition for slavery, we found that we were not free unless we freed ourselves. Well, we declare our freedom today. We declare our freedom so that we can help make this country free and indeed make the world free from military intervention, from oppression of women, oppression of black minorities and other groups, from participating in a full life, from participating in a truly great world, a non-nuclear world in which all of the peoples in it are free to develop themselves in their own style and image, in which all of the people are sovereign in which all the people are sovereign in their liberation. And so, sisters and brothers, as we go out today, let us build this mighty movement bigger and bigger. Let us give notice and serve notice on all institutions of our society, on all governments in our society, in all industry of our society, in all institutions, and say that the women's liberation movement shall lead in this country and in the world to provide a peaceful society and a future for the generations that come, a future for free people, a future in which we all partake in the decision-making process and partake in a just distribution of all the resources of the people for the benefit of the many instead of the benefit of the few.
I stand corrected. Bella Abzug is candidate from the 19th Congressional District, Democrat, but more important than that, she's long been identified with peace and women's liberation speeches and causes.
That we must struggle for liberation every day, and that we shall succeed for the power and the rights of all of the people. Thank you.
That was Bella Abzug as she spoke this evening at the rally for the August 26th women's strike. The next speaker is Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's the chairman of the New York City Commission on Human Rights. She also was one of the main speakers at this evening's rally.
It is not surprising that America, so long deaf and blind to the inhumanity of racial oppression, would come late to understand sexual oppression. It is not surprising in America, where migrants still live like animals, where Puerto Ricans and Mexican Americans still are not full citizens, where Italians and Jews and other ethnic groups still are stereotyped, where the poor remain shunted into ghastly ghettos and rural enclaves. With all this unfinished business for equality, it is not surprising that women have emerged late as the largest single group to which America still owes equal protection. There are two obvious ways in which America would be thrown into bankruptcy tomorrow. If the Supreme Court were to rule that the country had to pay back wages for the free labor it got from black slaves and the exploited labor it has gotten from their black descendants, or if the courts were to require that back wages be paid for the free labor of women, or to rectify the inequality in pay they receive for working. But blacks and women are making a far simpler demand, one within the easy grasp of a rich country, one that carries no dangers of bankruptcy. Beginning today, women demand that we erase all the empty and artificial barriers. Sex, like color, is most often a meaningless criterion, which becomes an oppressive criterion when it is considered among the qualifications for a job. No form of discrimination against women is more extensive, more serious, or more costly than job discrimination. Yet many Americans have fooled themselves into believing that women work for the fun instead of for the necessity of it. The cost of living in a constantly inflationary economy such as ours makes working a necessity for almost all women who work. Women, like men, want to work for reasons of self-fulfillment, but like most men, most women work because they have no choice. America, You cannot turn your face from these facts. Listen, the average working woman is 39 years old, married and living with a husband who needs her salary to supplement his. Almost half of all mothers work, a quarter of them with children under 3 years old. 50% of white mothers with children 6 to 17 work, and 62% of black mothers with children these ages work. Do these sound like women with time on their hands?
WBAI, New York.
These figures tell the true story that women work because they must, but are forced to make far more sacrifices than men to enter the job market that demands their labor. Women must work, but for only 58% of the average male salary. Women must work, but clerical work remains their mainstay with few other fields open to them. Women must work, but only 31 states have laws guaranteeing them equal pay for equal work. Women must work, but only 15 states forbid job discrimination based on sex. America has learned to decry statistics such as these when they apply to the oppressed minorities. When will they learn that such statistics are just as shameful when they relate to America's oppressed majority? Statistics like these are a major reason women demand immediate passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. Like blacks, women are unwilling to leave their rights to the whim of the legislatures which have denied those rights for so long. What the legislature gives, it can take back. What it enacts, it can repeal. Nothing short of a constitutional amendment can wipe away job inequality. With all the protective legislation on the books, women are still the largest group of exploited workers in the country. The latest Department of Labor statistics show that women are the fastest growing group of unemployed workers in this current period of recession. When women lose their jobs, their families, their children suffer. For the so-called extra money most women earn often means the difference between poverty and modest comfort. Although this is obviously the case for black women who work, what the country has refused to face is that it is also the case for white women who work. Thus, women, white and black, have common cause to see that America does not replace job discrimination based on race with job discrimination based on sex as the country's most serious domestic problem. Let me close with a word on black women, because their role in the struggle for sexual equality is much confused. Indeed, I wear the dress of my African forebears tonight, not to be senselessly symbolic, but to dramatize the fact that black women have a stake in the fight for equality for women. Because they are the most exploited women. Unlike the white woman, the black woman has always worked, from slavery to today, because the black family in America could not have survived without her meager wages to supplement the paltry pay of her husband, or in some cases to substitute for him as breadwinner. Yes, America welcomed black women into the job market as charwomen, mammies, maids, and domestics. The plight of the black woman worker vividly illustrates that the fight is not simply for jobs, but against exploitive working conditions for women workers. Household workers, waitresses, scrub women, and migrant workers should be at the front of the line today to tell America that it must not only open more jobs to women, but it must make exploitive women's jobs into dignified and well-paid work.
That was Eleanor Holmes Norton, chairman of the New York City Commission on Human Rights, speaking at this evening's rally in Bryant Park. You're listening to WBAI in New York, and we're recapitulating the day's events. We began in sort of chronological order, and we're currently in the midst of the rally. The next speaker is Kate Millett, author of the current bestseller, Sexual Politics and Ardent Women's Liberationist.
You know, today is a really beautiful day, right? And like, you're beautiful, I love you. We have a movement now. We're never gonna stop. This is the 50th anniversary of the first movement and its death. And it's the beginning of the new movement. Today is the first day of our lives. From now on, we're a revolution. Today is the end of millenniums of our oppression. We will never be slaves again. We have been slaves for thousands of years. We have been raped, pillaged, burned, murdered, cut into pieces. We have been prostituted. We have been sequestered in homes, treated like animals. We have been harassed daily on the streets. We are subject still. Yeah, you know that.
WBAI, New York.
We are subject still to the living slavery of prostitution. And tonight, all over Broadway and 57th Street, oppressed women will have to sell themselves to eat. But this is going to stop. Nowhere do we suffer as much as in this one concrete form of slavery left, in prostitution. Pimps are slave drivers. Prostitutes are exploited by everybody, by the vice squad, who are pimps. The dictionary says a pimp lives on the earnings of a prostitute. Well, but what we're out to end is a whole system, and it's called sexism. You know, and it's everywhere. It's in people's heads. It's in their attitudes, their values. Their psychological set is taught to them from the time of their infancy. It's like racism. And baby, it's hard to get rid of, but we're gonna do it.
Now, the American Adventure. The people and events shaping our lives and our times now. This week, Women's Liberation, the Unfinished Revolution of American Women, with ABC News correspondent Marlene Sanders.
50 years ago, women got the vote. It was a bitter struggle, but an easy goal to explain. Today, the things women want are more complex. Those involved in what has come to be known as the Women's Liberation Movement do not necessarily agree on all of the objectives. But there is a serious questioning of the role of women in our society. And the rhetoric of the civil rights movement has been contagious. The word equality is powerful. In big cities, as well as on hundreds of college campuses, groups of women have joined the movement. Their numbers are increasing. Here in Chapel Hill at the University of North Carolina, a group called Women's Liberation No. 27 issued demands to the university. They want the elimination of the quota system in the admittance of women. They demand daycare centers for the children of faculty, staff, and students. They also attempted to communicate to their fellow students what the Women's Liberation Movement is all about.
Where are you going, my little one, little one? Where are you going, my baby, my own?
Room, room, keep your dress down, dear.
Why can't I wear pants when I play, Mommy?
Because little boys wear pants, little girls wear dresses and keep their skirts down.
But you wear pants sometimes, Mommy.
That's different, because I'm married. If you're going to talk back to me like that, I'll tell your father when he gets home. Where's the nice doll we gave you for Christmas?
I don't know, Mommy. And anyway, it's more fun to play with Jimmy's toys.
Give me that. I'll give Jimmy back his toy. You go in the house and get your doll and play house. Don't you want to be a mommy when you grow up?
I don't know, Mommy. Anyway, do I have a choice?
My dear, all normal women want children.
Snakes and snails and puppy dog tails. That's what little boys are made of. Sugar and spice and everything nice. That's what little girls are made of. Better be dead than not wed.
I came here to see about universities that have good medical schools. I want to become a doctor.
Are you sure you want to become a doctor?
Oh, yes. I want to help all those people. And besides, I have very good grades. I have all A's.
Have you considered nursing? All those years of medical school will interfere with your role as a wife and mother.
Little Miss Liza went to her advisor for counsel on what she should do. Don't place your hopes high, for marriage is nigh. Your husband and children will need you. Better be dead than not wed. Jack and Jill went up to school and Jill had better grades. Now Jack's in the position of executive rule and Jill's his secretary slave.
What are your qualifications, young lady?
Well, I have a master's degree.
Can you type?
But I have a PhD.
Can you take shorthand?
But I'm Phi Beta Kappa.
How can you make a good cup of coffee?
But master's degree, PhD, Phi Beta Kappa Chi. Can any woman get a job? Poor boy, will she go? But can she?
It was a good show. I think it points out, maybe in a comical fashion, the real issues behind this movement, and the issues are very real. They correlate somewhat to the Black Revolution and the Youth Revolution.
I think I'm just a regular prejudiced male, though, in some respects, because I think if a woman really wants to be free, she may be.
Some men view the Women's Liberation Movement with scorn or amusement. The rhetoric is sometimes strident, and men often feel threatened by it. But these members of a group at the University of North Carolina and nearby Duke are married. Several have children. They're militant, but Linda Fisher told me she thinks there's something in the movement for men.
The very first thing is that men will no longer have to be solely responsible for the financial help of their family. They don't have to get ulcers and other things because they're the only wage earner. If a woman follows her desires throughout her life, and if that desire happens to be to work, to have a career, or simply to work at a job that she enjoys, then any given man that she's married to does not have to feel the sole responsibility for taking care of her then and later on, say if the marriage breaks up, as under the law now, he is responsible. The other things that he has to gain have to do with emotional needs. A lot of men have said, I wish I could cry, but they're long past learning how, because they've spent so long believing that it's inappropriate.
On the campus of Duke University, women are learning to discard something they have long felt inappropriate for them, their role as victims. Weak, vulnerable. One of the offshoots of the women's liberation movement has been the growth of self-defense classes. Students and local residents hired an expert to teach them how to overcome their physical limitations. The classes have an ideological basis, according to Duke student Mary Thad Ridge.
Well, I think that if women are going to want to really take the position in the world that belongs to them, one of the most important things is mobility. It means being able to go where you want to go, you know, when you want to go, without the protection of a man. And I think that this means that women should be able to, you know, walk on the streets at night with the same facility that men are able. Now, not only does this mean self-defense for women, certainly it means better lighted streets and police protecting people instead of property, but I think that one of the most important things is a woman's confidence.
These young women are finding their confidence in themselves enhanced by such classes. They believe that the helpless, dependent woman of the past no longer has validity in the world today. Marches, sit-ins, confrontations, all are part of protest in America today. One of the unifying issues of the movement has been the goal of repeal of abortion laws throughout the nation. Failing that, their reform. The issue has cut across differences between radical groups and others, like NOW, the National Organization for Women, reformist in nature, working within the system, to others, like WITCH, a colorful offbeat action group. This demand has been increasingly successful, with 13 states, including New York, having liberalized their laws in the last 3 years. Attorney Nancy Stearns sees more victories ahead.
We've learned an awful lot from the black movement and what it's done in the last 10 years. We know that we've got to use every forum. Okay, so we've been trying with the legislature and we've been failing, but even they've heard us now. You know, they just can't ignore the fact that we're all here. And we're trying the courts, and damn it, you know, we're in the streets. It's obvious we're in the streets. And with the three different things, and Lord knows what all else we'll have to try, this year we're going to win, whether it's in the courts or the legislatures. And as I said before, it's not only going to be New York, it's going to be every state. Much to our surprise, we've already begun winning. And you should know that courts in Wisconsin, in California, and in the District of Columbia have already said their laws are unconstitutional. They've said what we're saying, that women have a fundamental right to control their own bodies and to control their own lives.
Folk singer Mary Sanders Schartl.
Are the lucky the fortune of all womankind? They're always controlled. Truly. wagons are loaded, he's a pulling away. Pulling away.
The abortion law repeal movement aims to give women control over their bodies. Another goal of the movement is for women to be better represented in the mass media by the magazines, advertisers, and televisors who influence both men and women about a woman's role. Earlier this year, a coalition of liberation groups invaded the offices of John Mack Carter, editor of the Ladies' Home Journal.
We demand that the Ladies' Home Journal hire a woman editor-in-chief who's in touch with real women's real problems and needs. We demand that the magazine use women writers exclusively for all columns.
We demand that all sales and advertising personnel be women.
I think it'd be ridiculous to have only women working for Ladies' Home Journal. That's not the only qualification required of an editor on this magazine.
We demand that the magazine cease to further the exploitation of women by publishing advertisements that degrade women and by publishing ads from companies that exploit women in terms of salary and job discrimination.
I don't know. How do you determine that?
It's pretty easy. It's pretty easy.
Yes. Here's one.
Read it out loud. Read the catalog.
It's called the, quote, congratulations, dear, but exactly what does an assistant vice president do? Pudding.
Oh, dear.
Yes. It's an advertisement for Jell-O pudding tarts. And it shows that even a dumb woman who doesn't know what an assistant vice president does can make Jell-O pudding.
Yes!
Tarts.
Yes, and it was one. Sorry, dear, I cracked up your car pudding. Remember?
Here's one. How about this one? Keep your face on longer.
Your made-up face.
What's wrong with that one?
Oh, goodness.
What's wrong with
that? What's wrong with your natural face? You put on gook and makeup and lipstick and eyeshadow and you walk out and you feel like you're coming out of some movie set. And there isn't the glamour to accommodate it.
Made for a woman's extra feelings. Secret deodorant.
Through advertising and entertainment, women are frequently portrayed as sex objects. Many members of Women's Lib feel exploited by men, and they startled Wall Street one day by an exhibition in which roles were reversed.
Oh, they're so beautiful, all of them. Ah, oh, those men, those sex objects. What a nice tie. Look at the legs on that one. I'm so turned on. Sorry, you're beautiful too. Look at the those pants. They just bring out your best. Keep your best leg forward, sweetie. Oh. Oh, wow. Sweetie, you're old, but I like you. You're beautiful. Oh, I love gray hair. Makes men so sexy, you have no idea.
Hey, how do you like that hat over there?
Oh, what a chapeau.
How about glasses? I like them with glasses.
Oh, you're the strong, silent type.
Oh, hey, look at that long hair.
Oh, it's a hippie on Wall Street. Oh, I'm so turned on.
We're trying to point out that we don't, what it feels like to be whistled at, put down constantly sexually every time we walk down the street. We like people to understand what it feels like to have someone go all the time and play us at us and paw. And they tell us that we're supposed to think that it's a compliment. Dig it because we're supposed to dig that we're sexual objects and we don't want to be sexual objects anymore.
What kind of relationship between the sexes do you advocate? Is love out? Is sex out?
She wants to talk.
Unless men change, it's going to be very soon.
But not all women in the movement are agitated over this particular issue. There are many ideological battles being waged among the various factions. A vast outpouring of literature on the woman question has appeared since 1963, when Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, signaled the revival of the feminist movement. More radical voices have been raised since then. The question of who is the enemy gets varied responses, like this one from a member of the feminists.
The purpose of women's liberation, I think, is to liberate women. I mean, I think we see rape as an integral part of a terrorist activity to keep women down.
What about marriage?
Well, marriage is, as I've said, is unpaid labor. I mean, no woman, it's a free household slave for each man.
Well, we can't take that position because so many of us are married.
Pat Scullin, student.
We don't see many viable options to marriage in the society. And we also feel that marriage meets some important human needs for intimacy and, you know, it prevents loneliness and things like that. And there aren't any viable alternatives. So even if we criticize marriage, it's got to be in a constructive way in terms of thinking of new institutions that this society needs and new values people have to have relating to marriage.
The society itself would have to take major collective responsibility for the care and the rearing of children in the same fashion that they take at least a limited collective responsibility for the education of children today.
Mary that Alice is, Waters, editor, The Militant.
There would have to be provision made for 24-hour daycare, child care centers controlled by the people who use them to make sure that women are able to leave the home, that they aren't tied to their children 24 hours a day. The oppression of women, as I mentioned earlier, is so much tied in to class society. It is so, its roots are so deep, and its history is so deep, that it will take a major social revolution for women to be truly liberated.
Strangely enough, you know, I don't think man is the enemy. I think man is a fellow victim.
Betty Friedan, author.
Man is the fellow victim with women of the bind of half equality we're in now. He's as much oppressed by the burdens and the guilts and the hostilities that are bred by the current sexual definitions and the lack of equal responsibility and equal opportunity challenge that each man and woman has to suffer alone in his or her own family, bedroom, and kitchen, but yet must be solved by whole social and political change. Man's not the enemy.
Man may not be the enemy. In fact, man must be an ally if there is to be meaningful change. And one of the vital changes needed is on the job front. Professional women are taking the battle off the streets, away from the campuses, and into Congress and the courts.
But I think all of us are aware that some measure of discrimination against women exists at every level of our society.
Members of the academic, professional, and business world met recently in New York to form a professional women's caucus. The basic reason? Only 1% of all working women in the United States earn $10,000 a year or more. The median income for full-time women workers in 1968 was $4,500. For a man, $7,500. Women college graduates typically earn $6,700 a year, and men, $12,000. The women listen to social workers, doctors, professors, and lawyers like Doris Sassauer.
Every woman judge who left the bench in New York State through death or retirement was replaced by a man. This is just one example of a national pattern. In 1950, women lawyers represented one in 28 of the total. Now that ratio is down to one in 40. More women lawyers than men work in the lower paying, lower ranking positions in government and public agencies like the Legal Aid Society. The longer the attorney is out of law school, the percentage of women in these less remunerative jobs rises as men leave for more attractive positions in general or specialized practice. Our international sisters are 50% of the law students in Denmark, not 7% as in the United States, 36% of the lawyers in Russia, not 3% as in America, 25% of the judges in Poland, not 2% as here. We need immediate remedial action to secure for women not just equality before the law, but equality within it.
Most people assume that women already have full equality under the law. The 1964 Civil Rights Act banned discrimination on the basis of sex, but discrimination does not end by decree alone. 47 years ago, an equal rights amendment to the Constitution was proposed, but never passed. Senator Birch Bayh was chairman of the most recent hearings on the constitutional amendment, and he told me what it would accomplish.
What it would do would be say that everyone is going to be treated the same. It would do the same thing for women as was done for Negroes after the Civil War, when we amended the Constitution and said that no one should have their rights abridged because of race, color, or creed. We would just merely say, or sex.
In what ways are women affected by this lack of protection?
In California, there's a law that requires women to seek special approval before they can go into a business for themselves. Now, men don't, but women have to. In some states, women cannot own property in their own name. If they're married, they have to have their husband own it for them. In Illinois, for example, a man is no longer a minor at age 18, but a woman has to wait till she's 21. Well, maturity shows us that probably a girl matures a little more rapidly than a young man. At least they ought to reach the age of majority at the same time and not be discriminated against. There are three states, as I recall it, Alabama, Mississippi, and South Carolina, that I remember, that don't permit women to serve on the juries at all. Now, certainly women are tried for crimes in those states, but their own sex cannot sit on the jury of their peers. These are just a few of the examples. There are a number of examples where women who work are discriminated against. You can have a woman physicist sitting in an adjoining laboratory facility with a man and receive 25 or 30% less pay. Now, this is not right. I think many people can and have wrongly interpreted the women's liberation movement, or whatever you want to call it. None of us who are concerned about this discrimination feel that it's our responsibility to tell a woman what she should do, whether she should work or go to school or raise a family. This is none of our responsibility in government. But I think it is our responsibility in government to give all of our citizens, whether they are male or female, black, white, yellow, or brown, the opportunity to utilize their total talents as they want to use them to the ultimate of their ability.
Oh, sad is the fortune of all womankind. She's always controlled.
The women's liberation movement will not disappear after the singing, marching, and shouting have died down. Man himself may not be the enemy, but his practices are under attack, whether they are motivated by prejudice, profit, or habit. This is a search for equality of opportunity, not the wish to be just like men. It is the desire for more options, for choice, for a shattering of stereotypes, for women to choose more freely the kinds of lives they want to live, and if we choose to work, to be paid in full. The status quo is being challenged by the women's liberation movement. Today, it's still a man's world. And just look at it. Move over, gentlemen. Maybe you can use some help. This is Marlene Sanders.
Hard luck is the fortune of all.